C1PR. Number 3A.
I said that I would like to put these meetings under the tone of life and spirit. And we have considered to some extent what I mean with the way of life. And now I want to consider with you a little bit of what I mean with life as spirit. As I said before, it is the tone of the days of creation and not so much the absolute combination of life and spirit. We all have studied the word of life, the word of God. We all have done good study, deep study, consecrated study. We have been investigating the ordered word of life, that wonderful word of God, that wonderful law of accomplishment which rules all creative activity. And yet, we sometimes feel a bit disillusioned about what this deep study has done. One or the other may have felt that this study, in which we have put lots of work and time and consecration and energy and I don't know what, has not brought forth so much as we hoped it would bring forth. And I feel one always should face situations. And if that feeling is present, that one is a bit disillusioned about one's energies, then it is right to find an answer for it. Perhaps everywhere we find that one or the other student comes along and says, I have put so much study into this science, but it seems that it doesn't really live, that I don't get the fruits I hoped I would get. And this is the subject which I would like to consider now. Why is it that we are disillusioned to some extent or to a large extent? Why is it that we feel that our efforts have not brought fruits as we hope they would? It's a serious question in many parts, and it needs an answer. And the answer must not be personal. It must not be my answer. If it is my answer, then it isn't the answer. It must be an answer from principle. And so let's try to reason out this question soberly from the point of view of what we know about this word of life. We feel that this word of life, the ordered word of God, is a very big thing, a wonderful thing, that it is an all-pervading theory, and as we look round, we just can see that this word of God rules really every creative ability and creative action. But this theory apparently doesn't seem to live deeply. It doesn't seem to be near and warm and perhaps not all-satisfying. Where is the answer to this? The answer to this is that we can't expect this theory to be living, warm, full of fruits, as long as we consider this world of life only from the standpoint of mind, from the standpoint of study, thinking, devote to thinking. The world, if the world is to live, it must go the world. It must go the world through mind, spirit, soul, principle. Then it becomes the world of life. But at the beginning, we viewed, and that's right, because it's the old way, we viewed that world of God mainly, predominantly, from the point of view of mind and mind only. That doesn't say that we were studying spirit, but we are studying spirit. See, this is the point of view of mind. We were studying what soul means, but it was the point of view of studying, of mind. We were studying what principle means, what science means, what the whole concept of science implies. We were thinking about it. We viewed it from the point of view of mind. But the world of life is more than mind. The world of life is mind, spirit, soul, principle, which becomes our way, our method of living, and gives us the fruit of truth, always adapted from love's point of view. So it is quite all right what has perhaps happened in us when we feel that we have given a lot of study to the world. It is beginning right with mind, with thinking, logical thinking, intelligent thinking, with study, devoted study, but it's mind. Whatever we study, it's from the point of view of mind. But mind isn't the all and everything. That's why Mrs. Eddy says, the life-giving quality of mind is spirit. She says, well, if we feel this wonderful world of life, which we look at visionary, which from the intellectual point of view, from the pure, from the nice, positive intellectual point of view is wonderful, well, that's visionary. And if we feel that that doesn't live in us, is not near in us, is not warm in us, it is because we haven't gone the way. The way is that if we have considered the world from the point of view of mind, that's the first step. Then comes the second, and that's spirit. And spirit isn't S-P-I-R-I-T. Spirit is something very tangible to the heart. It is as if at the beginning the whole study and the whole consecration somehow happens up here in the brain, with the thinking in the head. But then comes the second step, where it goes to the heart, the spirit, where it is no more a matter of intelligent vision, of intelligent study, of lot of study, of lot of reading. We think we go the way of life by reading pages and pages and pages in every book that falls into our hands. That's only mind. It doesn't matter if that mind considers mind, or considers spirit, or considers soul, or principle, or life, or truth, and love. It doesn't matter if that mind considers the world, or the Christ, or the Christianity, or science. It's from the point of view of mind. But the world is all the synonyms. And so, perhaps, if we investigate our attitude, our heart attitude, we find that our heart was not quite there, that our brain was there, that our logical thinking was satisfied, but perhaps that our heart was not there, was only halfway there, and is only halfway satisfied. And so the word says, just go a little step further. Leave now the standpoint of mind as the only viewpoint. go and take the standpoint of mind and wed it now to spirit. And spirit is that quality which gives life and warmth and depth and love to mind, to the whole Word of God. So, when we go through the textbook together, my main concern is this, that we are not so much interested if we can really see where the subtone of life starts and where the subtone of truth starts. That's right. That's necessary. It gives us our tools. But I prefer to have just a little bit of that and a lot of the spirit, a lot of the heart in it. I'm going to tell you what I think that means, on and off. But first, I just want to try to see how the word itself tells us that we have to go the word, through the word. And the word is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, leading us into truth and being embosomed in love. So, the principle of the word tells us that if we have that feeling that there is no life in what we have studied, that principle of the word tells us, well, then there must be something lacking of the nature of spirit. Because spirit, as Mrs. Eddy says, is the life-giving quality of mind. And she says, that which hinders us to go the way of life, the persecutor to the way of life, she says, is the determination to hold spirit in the grasp of matter. See, it's always spirit which needs to be cultured and the spiritual outlook which is lacking if we feel the whole thing doesn't live. And so we find a wonderful key in the word itself, why the word isn't warm and living and tender and near and satisfactory. You see, our fundamentals are so simple that we hardly look for them as a solution. That's the trouble with any religious thinking which we have, and the breaking in of the scientific thought, that it never goes back to science and never asks really science itself, what is my next step? What is the solution to it? So, if we go through the textbook, I would love to see that we culture more and more that attitude of spirit coupled with that wonderful, clear, distinct, intelligent sense of mind. What are these qualities of spirit? When we consider them in its genesis sense, it's the conceptive sense. In mind, we have the creative sense, the intelligent sense. Where in mind we clear up a thing in our thought, where we get some clarification on any subject, so that we say, well, now that makes sense. Don't need to hold there. The moment we say, well, that makes sense, we have not finished the work. We have finished the first step of mind. The vision has become clear. That's the creative, intelligent sense. Then comes spirit. The order says, now, you must go to spirit. And spirit says, all right, conceive of it. Take it in. Don't have it anymore there. Spirit says, come, take it in into you, that it may abide in our heart. But put it into the heart, not into the head. And we can only love with our heart, so to say. It's all symbolic. But you get the feeling of it, what I mean. And it's saying, it's that sense which says, oh, wonderful, that vision of mind that I'm going to value above everything. And you get to spirit. We begin to value things. Well, we can't value things with intellectual abilities. It's a sense of heart, of inward devotion. It's the sense where we begin to say to that vision which is wonderful, say, oh yes, and that I value above everything. You have your second day, your firmament which has the waters above, and say, oh yes, that I'm going to cherish above everything. Which says, yes, that's worth everything. That's worth everything else. That is the thing I put first in my mind. Yes, that is the thing which I love, which I will hug, that which I will cherish, that which will be foremost in my mind. And you get that sense of spirit. If we leave the child in the first day, just clear, naked, well, the winds come and get the cold and dies away. But if we take that naked child, which we have seen, it's whole, it's complete, and begin to clothe it. Spirit duly feeds and clothes every object as it appears in the line of spiritual creation, and can only clothe it warm. So somehow the warmth for this vision of mind must be there. Without that love for what we have seen visionally, the child is naked. Spirit is that which you know as worship in the days of creation, the second day. You worship. Well, what does it mean? We have known that. Yes, we have said, yes, spirit is worship. Yes, I know that by heart. That's up in here, in the head. But worship means that is something which is in my heart, which I say, all right, that I adore. All that which does not come up to that standard, that I don't value so much. That is not foremost in my thought. To that I give not my best I have. And so the worship of spirit comes and says, that vision of mine, to that I give everything I have, the best I have. I give the best I have in terms of time, of energy, of desire, of consecration, of devotion, of love, of valuing and valuing and valuing and valuing, because the devil is coming and say, your vision of mine is not worth very much. The devil will come and say, that vision of mine, that's intellectual. And he is right. But we have spirit. And we can say, but that's my only value I have. And so I, little by little, that sense of the vision of mine becomes near and warm and big in me and big in me and the only thing in me. And if it becomes nearer to me and nearer to me, when I value it more, when I press it more to my heart, when it is just all and everything, and when I just press it to me, and protect it against any attack from the outside, against every devaluation of it, and against every sneer at it, and against every argument against it, it becomes near, becomes my child, becomes me. Then it can't be any more cold. It's in me. I mean, as an illustration. But you can see the tone of it, and the tone of it is spirit. But spirit in that sense of the days of creation, the approach God first. And in that approach to God, Spirit says, adore, adorable one. We should say to our vision which we have, whatever we study, whatever we have studied and found, that's fine. That's the thing. We should never stop there. It's only the first day. Spirit comes and says, all right, and that I worship, that I adore, that I value. That's the pearl without price. And I'm not going to let it rot away from me by any price. Well, then, Spirit does its job. And Spirit does its job and says, I'm Spirit. If you let me in only a little bit, my nature is unfoldment and fruit. And then there will be no more that sense that our study is dry, and dead. The letter is always dead. Again, Just try to repeat this tone in one or the other way. Just to convey in my simple words and perhaps not quite correct English what I mean, but which I feel is a turning point in many of us. And many of us feel, I have put so many years of consecration into this study. Do I get anywhere? Is it living to me? Well, if one has only put study in it, intelligence in it, thinking in it, we have done a wonderful job. But only the first step. We don't have to discard that first step. No, just on the contrary, comes the Spirit and says, love what you have done. Love what you have found out. Love your vision. Value your vision. It's the biggest thing. It's that which is eternal and substantial. Nothing can take away. And you begin to love it, to worship it, to adore it, to adore it, to adore it, until inwardly one finds, well, I have the biggest child, I carry in me the biggest child, the most wonderful child, and then that woman's sense begins to grow, and the child begins to grow, because Spirit says, I am unfoldment, I bring forth fruit. That's the inward nature of Spirit. But unless we let Spirit in, we give Spirit no chance to unfold in us. Unless we just make a barrier, a mental barrier, and say, all right, I encircle myself with a lot of study and a lot of thinking, that's mine. But we must open the door and let the heart speak to this vision. That's valuation. True worship. How is it? I'm not the farmer, but somehow I know something that an egg is laid and that the hen goes and broods over it. Well, the egg is laid. We have done that. The creative ability, that's something with which we have been familiar very much. Many of us didn't know how to study, and we learned how to study. It's not easy, it wasn't easy, but we did it. And we did put a lot of study in it. Well, that's the creative ability. But afterwards comes the hen, the mother, and she sits on it. The egg doesn't get bigger, the egg doesn't get another shape, the egg just stays what it is. But the hen just broods over it. And the hen doesn't run away every other minute and says, well, the first time I just make a little bit longer with it and it knows exactly if I'm not there, and if it's not kept warm, and if it's not kept protected, the chicken doesn't come out. See? Doesn't come out. There is no unfoldment. No chance of the third stage. So, the Spirit of God brooded over the deep things of God. Apparently in the old language that first verse meant that the Spirit of God brooded upon the deep. And that's Spirit. That's the thing which is foremost perhaps today that we have, that we give to that vision, the warmth which it needs so that that vision really can bear fruit and develop. We need that warmth, that brooding. Keep our vision warm and high and big, valuable above things. Moralhauser always compares Spirit with an incubator. Said, well, Spirit is like an incubator. You have to keep the eggs warm and not run away. Every instant run away. You have to think about it, reflect about it, and then it begins. Something begins to happen.